Welcome to Energy Medicine Radio with Dr. Wu Di, a celebration of unique healing modalities for your mind, body, and soul, opening the pathway to wellness, enlightenment, and creative living. Our mission is to share consciousness-shifting information with humanity and help people improve and transform their overall quality of health, wealth, and happiness. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening. This is Dr. Wu Di for Energy Medicine Radio. And tonight is a beautiful night. It's the week before Halloween. So there's a lot of people getting ready for their scary, spooky stuff. And I have something real special tonight. I have a friend that I've known most of my life. And she is an incredible artist. And not only is she an incredible artist, she does ceremonies, spiritual ceremonies that opens the creativity in one's life. So as we open up to our creative nature, things really happen. I've known her, and I saw this lady evolve into an incredible artist and an incredible spiritualist. So I'd like to introduce Lynn Ray. She's from Tucson, Arizona. Lynn, are you there?
I certainly am, sir. And once again, it's a wonderful opportunity to sit and talk with you.
Well, thank you, and welcome to Energy Medicine Radio. So I'd like to ask you a few things, if you don't mind. I know you've been an artist, and I've known you. I remember years ago I saw your pen and inks, and I was impressed with those so much. I mean, it was just one of the things that I saw in you, and I went, wow, this lady really has a creative talent. And then I know you involved yourself and evolved into allowing spirit to take over. What, will you tell us a little bit about yourself and your art career and how spirit has affected you and the energy? What's going on over there in Tucson, Arizona?
Well, first of all, we have a wonderful sunset going on here this evening, and I want to thank you very much because, as you said, we've known each other for many years, and you have and always were one of the most, the first to, outside of my immediate family, to recognize my talent. And I think that it's very essential that people around you support you. And when you're given that support, it really makes life much easier to live to its most possible possibility. So I want to thank you for being one of the people who indeed have helped me along my way. But if I were to go back and trace my early beginnings, I would say that it all started for me when I was about five, and I was the younger, born after the war child, and had two older sisters. And my mother was a ballerina. And at five, the three of us, with our mother, had a recital. And I was considerably younger than my sisters. And when we went out on stage, I tripped and fell. And I, to this day, don't believe I did it intentionally. But my sisters were very, just, you know, they were young adults, they were teenagers. They were just absolutely embarrassed to no end. But what I found is when I was down there on the floor and I looked out at the audience, that if I smiled and made a face, if I took advantage of what had been given to me, that I got people to laugh with me. And I never will forget that. That was just like a moment when I realized your life is what you make of it. The unfortunate thing about that was that my sister said they would never dance with me again. But that was okay. When I was about 10, going back to my sisters again, my mother had a rule in our house, and the rule was none of us could get out of the kitchen until the entire kitchen was done. Well, my sisters didn't think I was going quite quick enough, so what they did was staged a rebellion. And they told my mother that they would prefer us, for me to be out of the kitchen as opposed to holding them up in the kitchen. The result? My mother said, fine, she's out. What are we going to have her do? And she said, all right, you're now in charge of the garden. So So at 10 years of age, I would go with my mother, and I would pick flowers in the nursery, and I learned how to arrange flowers by color and seasons, by types, and I found that I had a great skill with color and with nature. And then when I was a little bit older, I continued to have experiences that showed me that what happened to me really always gave me an opportunity to move forward in my life. And I never, ever took things as bad. I didn't understand that word, really. So that was how I think I developed in my mind this attitude that your life is what you make out of it, that your life is your intention. And also that creativity is really something that is no more than what you imagine that you can do. So those were the earliest memories that I have that defined myself as an artist. Got any questions on that?
Well, that's wonderful. That's a nice way, because, like you said, you fell down, and the floor that you fell on is the floor that pushed you up.
And absolutely.
That was probably the expression that has made you such a well-known artist. Lynn Ray, could you tell me a little bit of how spirits and energy affected your art? I mean, you've been involved in running an ashram in Telluride, Colorado years ago, and you've been involved in Buddhist work and Kabbalistic work and many different paths that touch on not only the creativity, but the essence of the spirit. And I'm wondering how that played into the art and the creativity, and how does that flower open within you? How did that manifest exactly?
Well, Dr. Woody, I have to go back to my mother, who was an amazing influence on many, many ways for me. When I was 16, and what I really wanted to do more than anything else was be going out with my boyfriend at that time, on Thursday nights, and this was in the early 60s, my mother had discovered this group called the Self-Realization Fellowship and something called yoga. And she required that once a week, we were required, including my grandfather who lived with us, to all do yoga for an hour a week. And it was so creepy. It was just like, why do we have to do this? And then my mother, who always felt that I had an open-minded, creative soul, took me with her to the Detroit Institute of Art, where the Self-Realization Fellowship met on Sundays. And I observed my first ceremony that I really remember, which was this beautiful wedding, a Hindu wedding, that had people coming down the aisles in the auditorium there at the Art Institute, and there was tambourines and all kinds of wonderful sitar music, and people were throwing flowers, and there was incense in the air. And it was just a wonderful assault in the most positive way on my senses. It just, sitting there in the art museum, watching this ceremony, I just knew there was something combining spirituality and ceremony and art that was my destiny, that was something that I was supposed to do. And so rather than fighting the yoga any longer, I really got into that. I really got into appreciating that although I was born Jewish, my mother was raised in a convent, and at 16 got involved in Buddhism and Hinduism, and I really took advantage of having the opportunity of having an ecumenical upbringing. And that was really the start of what allowed me throughout my life to be open to various religions and modalities and ways of being, to open yourself up.
That's wonderful. And to have a parent, you know, at that time, there wasn't a yoga studio on every corner like there is now. So to be brought into that, you know, that modality to learn about yoga and be exposed to, I know I've read something on Paramahansa Yogananda and his teachings, and it's an incredible teaching that he has. If you haven't read the book, The Autobi- The autobiography of a yoga.
Yeah,
by Paramahansa Yogananda. That is an incredible book, and that gives so many people an insight on what yoga is. It's not just an exercise to stretch out your body. It's not just a physical exercise, but it really opens up the inner channels. And I believe that as the inner channels are open, the meridians, the chakras, you start to evolve, you start to change, and you become that artist in your heart. I remember one of the mantras that I heard years ago. It was Dittaridayam Punya Sarashatru Binashanam. You know, may your heart open to the energy and the sun. And it's just wonderful that a parent would take the time, even though it seemed like forced labor, at least you had your family around and hopefully your boyfriend was there.
Sometimes.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
But anyway,
well, anyway.
So from that, I do want, as long as you mentioned Yogananda, when I was a young mother and was actually nursing my son, I was involved with an organization that put on metaphysical seminars, which still does it today. It's Ray Merriman and the Aquarian Revelation Center. And we were at a retreat, and because I know we have limited time, I just have to say it was my most surprising meditative experience of my life. I had been in deep meditation, and who came to me at that time was Sri Yukteswar, and who is Yogananda's master. And with Sri Yukteswar was Gandhi. And they gave me a message that basically had been reinforced earlier in the seminar, which it was, if you but follow your bliss, the spirits will throw rose petals in your path. And I think that particular message for me was so deep and so unable to be explained by the rational mind that it has been a mantra for me my entire life. And I think that one of the things about creativity is that your mind is open to seeing those kinds of things as creative opportunities. And it isn't about how good I could draw with pen and ink or how much I've invented new ways of working with art, which I have been privileged to do and have won awards. It's more about the journey that I've taken of creativity in my life that has been the blessing.
Wow, well, that's incredible to hear. There's a lot of artists that I know and a lot of, you know, different people I met through the years. And I know every artist I know has a creative spark that sort of guides them on. And some of them are into drugs and some of them are into, you know, industry. But there's not many who really touch on the spiritual aspect of the art. And I know I read this or I saw something about you is when you were in living in the mountains in Colorado, you met a guru or a guru came into your life that you were talking to clairvoyantly. Is that true?
I don't know that I would say that I was talking to her clairvoyantly. I think that, actually, before the guru that you're speaking about came into my life, I had studied with my husband the Seven Ascended Masters, and I always was very much Om Babaji, Om Babaji, Om. And I also, in that Ascended Masters, there was also Count Germain, who I always had an affinity for. And I think it was my affinity with Count Germain that brought me into Tarot and into astrology and those forms of metaphysics. But our home, my husband's and my home, was indeed, as you mentioned, an ashram, and it was for my yogi Shakti, who now lives in Deerfield Village, Florida, which isn't that far from you, actually. And she came upstairs. We lived in an old Queen Anne Victorian, and up on the third floor, which is where I went and did my artwork when my children were sleeping, I had put up the series of pictures of the Ascended Masters. And when she walked in and she saw them, she took a breath and looked at me and said, "That's our connection. These are my masters as well." And that was always a very profound connection that, you know, here, it's almost when the student is ready, the teacher appears, and that certainly is true. But when it's actually something like this, that how did a guru that was named guru at the great Ganja ceremony every 7 years end up in Queen Anne Victorian house in Telluride, Colorado, turning to me and say that we came from the same cloth, basically, that we both had the same masters. So, you know, once again, when things like that happen, if you're aware and if you're really paying attention, they can't just be, gee, is that cool? There has to be something in that that is in your journey and helps you to move forward and stays with you at times where you have your doubts or difficult times.
Very, very interesting. And I have a question. As you, you get involved in so many metaphysical things, has this changed your art? Has this changed what you do in your art? I know that you do metal art, but you do sculpturing too. And I know most artists who are really creative, they have many medias. But I'm wondering how did, all your activities, metaphysical, like you said, the Crayon Revelation Center and the gardening and the mummy and the whole thing. How did this really influence your art, would you say? Where are you going with your art? Tell me,
Dr.
a little
Woody,
bit about
it. I think, again, one of the most amazing interviews I ever had was when I first started to do my bronze, and I had these figures in my bronzes that I called sentient beings or the ancient ones. And the woman who was interviewing me turned to me and said, what's the significance of these mummies? And I went, mummies? And I looked at them, and for the first time when she called them that, I saw that what I referred to as sentient beings, the masters that were leading me, actually did look like mummies. And I had to realize, wow, that must come from my influence when I used to go with my mom to the Detroit Institute of Art for those Sundays at the services for the Self-Realization Fellowship. And my grandmother lived right next door to the Art Institute, so I went there every Saturday. My favorite room was leaving the museum via the mummies room. I just thought that was the coolest room. I had no idea that was influencing me. And it was at that point when that was pointed out to me that I realized that true art is not something that you struggle with. It's making yourself open enough that whatever wants to come out, you let come out without criticizing it and just expressing it. And I think that a lot of people believe, and certainly teachers who are educating young children, that art is the province of children that are 7 and 8 and can draw a figure with head, with a head that's in arms and a body, a torso that is a correct proportion. That's not art. Picasso wouldn't be who he was if he was able to draw the same way as Da Vinci. He expressed himself in a childlike, honest expression of what he saw. And I think that we're told throughout our life that several people are artists, but all of the population isn't. And my experience is that's not at all true. What is true, it's not a question of an artist being a special kind of person, but of every person being a special kind of artist. And I am just, the artist Kandinsky said, that the artist is thrice blessed and they have certain responsibilities. And one of them, because you are granted the ability to be an artist, is to return your gift to your society in the best way that you can. And that's what I'm doing. And I'm not self-censoring. And when I achieve success in one modality, I go ahead and go into another one. And I just keep on experiencing. And I keep on keeping on. What was it? Who was that? Mr. Natural?
Yeah, that was it. Keep on keeping on. Keep on trucking.
That's all I'm doing. I'm keeping on, keeping on.
Boy, you're going way back, in time.
that's because I now feel I'm sage and I can do that.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Listen, I'd like to talk about something else that you went into that's a little more serious subject. I know that you worked with hospice for a while, you know, helping people pass into the next dimension. Could you talk a little bit about that? And, you know, I know this, you know, most people are born off stage and they die off stage, and we don't really see any births anymore. We don't really, you know, we don't really see any deaths anymore. So when a person decides to step into something that serious and to really be with someone or, you know, help someone move into the next plane, that's a very blessed thing. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Sometime in the late 90s, I became very, very interested in the hospice movement. I really felt, because a lot of my work was about the journey of life and thresholds and passing over. And I just had a natural interest. I've always believed in reincarnation. I've had a belief system that being conscious at death is extremely an integral part of the basic belief system. And so in the late 90s, I did become qualified as a hospice volunteer, specifically because what I wanted to do was do art projects with children and with people in general, but specifically with children, to help them understand passing when their loved ones pass. Because like you pointed out, we don't talk about it. We don't have grandma and grandpa in the house, and they don't die in front of us, and it isn't normalized any longer. We put people away. And certainly hospice is helping a lot to bring back an awareness, but I'm talking 20 years ago. And as I've said, I have tried to live my life by whatever comes in front of me, accepting it and moving in that direction, and am always grateful when in the future, I can see why past actions made so much sense. And that was the case in this instance when my husband contracted cancer and died in a relatively short period of time in 2000. And what I did at that time was I opened the house and made a promise to myself that I had been doing a lot of special events in Telluride and quite well-known events I was responsible for up there. And I decided that Buck's death was going to be my best ever show. And it meant that I was going to let people who had never before seen death come in, find a part that they could play. Because, you know, Dr. Woody, you know how often people say to people, I would really like to help, and they mean it. And all that it requires is that the person who is saying, being told they want to help, is to find some way to honor that request. And if you honor that request, then what you're doing is through your experience, you're allowing other people to experience it. And by experiencing it that way, then they, at multiplying effect, can deal with it when it happens in their life. And so like everything, it starts with one person saying to somebody else that multiply, blah, 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 blah. And that's basically how I have felt for many years regarding death and dying in our society. And it's especially relevant right now as so many of the baby boomers are getting older, and we have been known to want to start things in a different way and not do it just by what was the previous pattern. And I really believe that there are a lot of conversations that are happening right now about death and dying, and I think that it is one of the best and positive things that's happening in our society is a realistic way of looking at that process and normalizing it and honoring it.
Right. You know, in the West, we don't celebrate it. I lived in Hawaii for a year back in, I think, 1990, and they had a celebration once a year. I think it's in August. Koto drums, big drums that they beat. And they say it's for the spirits. And then after that, everybody is invited to the cemetery where people are sitting down and having a picnic. And at the time, I thought that was really strange, but it's really honoring our, you know, our ancestors. I know when I, this is funny, when I went back to school and I decided to be an acupuncturist. I was doing healing work for a long time, but I think I'll go to acupuncture school, thinking it was just placing needles in. And when I got to the school and started studying, I found out I was studying internal medicine. Oh, my goodness, this was so much work. So, yeah, I was, like, blown away. Oh, my goodness, what did I do? You know, I've spent all my time studying, you know, morning, noon, and night. If I wasn't in a class, I was reading a book. And when I went back to Detroit to visit my family, I got to Detroit, and I went to the cemetery, and I asked all my relatives. My family's been in the retail business for centuries, I think. And I had to really ask them for some help to move into the next path of being a healer and a doctor. And when we get in touch with our ancestors, you know, when we realize who they are, I can see why the ancients, you know, the Chinese and the Japanese and the Koreans, the Asian cultures, they honor their, and even in the Jewish culture, we honor our ancestors because that's where we come from. That is our roots, and that root system really, once we in tune to it, it really opens us up on many levels. And I know that you've touched on that in your art and the way you've been living your life.
Well, you know, when you speak about the Hawaiian custom, here I am in Tucson, Arizona, amongst the very Hispanic culture, and November 1st, All Souls Day, is Dios los Muertos. And everyone here gets all dressed in costumes and in joyous ways welcome their ancestors, who they'll often dress in clothes like them and for makeup put on a skeleton's face or body because they're still with them. And it's just, as I said, I am so pleased to hear right now not only how many people will say hospice has been a saving grace in my life, to hear conversations now actively happening all over about the aging process, and that not only about it as it relates to dying, but as it relates to not getting sick and dying, and not getting sick, old, and dying, of how to live with as much vitality as you possibly can, and set for yourself intentions of health and holiness, and live your life fully and not feel like, oh, it's all over. You know, you were over the hill at 40 and then 50 and then 60. And then, you know, you're never over the hill until you believe you are.
You know, I read an article the other day that was very interesting. It was about a psychologist. I think he was in Boston, and he staged he made this thing. He was doing a test, a regulated test, so he could find out what's going on people's behavior and aging. And he invited a group of six men and women. No, I think it was six men, and he invited them to join him. And some of these men, they were in their 70s, their middle to late 70s. They had different ailments, crutches, some. Not crutches, but canes. Some had walkers, and you know they were going through health trials and tribulations, you know, as they were growing old. And he invited them to stay with him for a week in this house. And what he did is he had black and white television in the house, and he set it up that they were the games, the football games and the baseball games of the 70s, no, of the 60s, and the house was made up exactly like 1955 or 1960. And they came in, and after a week of being there, these guys were joking and talking about the baseball game and who won this and hockey, and they started to play, and then they were throwing footballs in the house. They put down their crutches. Yeah, right. It was an incredible experiment. And all of a sudden, they went back to the time when they were vibrant, and it changed their lives and made them more vibrant. Took them out of their existing condition that I'm 75 and I'm old and I'm dying, to remembering how it was. And, you know, aging is, or like my friend says, the stage you're at, not the age you're at, is all about, how you feel inside and how, what type of energy you're putting out there. If you're putting out old and tired and lazy and, you know, all the, like I talked to a friend tonight and he said, I'm suffering. I said, you don't need to suffer. I said, pain is mandatory, suffering is optional. And he said,
correct.
Oh, yeah, you know, it sort of woke him up. So, I, you know, it's funny, you know, with the aging process, it's, you know, it's how you feel inside, you know. It's how you feel inside and how you conduct your life.
Correct. But so, I want to also at the same time acknowledge that there are people who are not healthy or robust. There are people, I'm in charge of my synagogue's committee for people who are ill and giving them resources and taking care of them and getting everyone to know about it so everybody is, you know, a community helping each other in sickness. And there's this wonderful woman who just this last year has been fighting cancer and has had a fantastic positive attitude, and she fell today and broke her hip. And so there are times that things happen to you, and you don't have to be bad to have them. They're not a sign that you've been, you know, that you're getting your comeuppance. I think it's really important to see that if you have your health, it really is a grace. It really is something that you should value tremendously, because as we do get older, the incidence or the possibility of an incidence, which is going to put us on a slippery slope, becomes, it's just statistics, you know. And I remember when you go back to the 70s, when natural childbirth was happening, when finally women were all having natural childbirth, all of a sudden, women who had to have cesareans felt like they were losers, whereas before natural childbirth became the rage, women were like, wow, you got to have a cesarean. So, you know, things change, and we have to recognize that. And we have to, that's what I'm trying to say. In order what we do, we have to be in the moment and accept what happens in the moment and work with what's in the moment. And perhaps that's what you're saying when you're saying suffering is optional, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I see many patients, you know, every day, and some are suffering, and other ones have pain, and, you know, and they deal with it, and, you know, and those are the type of patients that are much easier to heal, you know, because they're already open to change, and, you know, they're not woe is me. They're not the woe is me patient.
Well, that's why I say creativity is really imagination. If somebody tells you you have something you've got to go through, how are you going to imagine it? How are you going to have an intention? You know, what are you going to do about it? John Lennon, I believe, said imagination is everything. Considering what is reality, imagination is everything, basically. You know, because the reality of situations is not always the best. And that's, for me, what the creativity is all about. It's making the most of whatever you have in front of you. And some of us have a better opportunity than others, but it doesn't remove the need for all of us to just try to make the most about what's in front of us at any given time, no matter what your age,
Amen.
No matter what your financial status is.
Yeah, I give you a quick story, and then I want to ask you about your ceremony work you do. I had a young lady come in today. She's 23, and she's pregnant. This is her second child. And, of course, she was stressed out, moved into a new house, and a lot. So I said, what would you like to work on? And she said, oh, I got this, and I got that. I said, if we could pick one thing, what would you like me to get rid of, if I could get rid of something for you? She said, I'm anxious. I'm very anxious. So I did some kinesiology and tested her and found out that the liver was out of place, which has to do with anger. And I said, well, what are you angry about? She said, I'm angry about everything. So Anyway, she's very cute, you know, and she's young, 20, I think 23. So anyway, we did a visualization on her house because she said she's angry about the house. So we started, you know, clearing the house in her mind, and we got to the room where the new baby's going to be. And in that room, she said it's totally filled with clutter, and that has her beside herself. So we did a visualization, you know, a pretend. You know, we pretended. We intended for something to happen, and it didn't happen yet, so we pretended. And what I had her do is I had her decorate the room, put in the baby, you know, the baby bed, whatever that's called. I had her put in the little thing where they change the diaper. Yeah, the crib. I had her put in the thing where they change the baby. I had her put those little things on the ceiling that turn around, you know, entertains the baby. So yep. She really fixed up the whole room. She painted it. She made it the color she wanted. She totally decorated the room, and then, you know, we had her come out of it, and I said, how did you feel? She said, I'm so glad that room is taken care of now. So,
but you see, that was a creative imagination exercise.
Right. Well, you know, we all have our creativity, no matter if it's in art or healing or singing or writing or whatever that is. It's just recognizing and using it. So I'm going to change the subject now. I heard that you're starting to do ceremonies, and you've been doing ceremonies, coming of age, you know.
Baby welcoming. There's an organization that is across the country. It's called the Life Celebrants Foundation. And you go through different classes for marriages, for life cycle ceremonies, for funerals. So you can take different areas of study. And what they basically are doing that I really, really like is they are facilitating, like you just did in your opportunity with this young woman, you basically did a ceremony there. We as celebrants ask, we sit down with people, whatever the ceremony, we all know what you would do with a marriage. You all understand what you would do with a funeral. But let's take a house blessing, for example, which is pretty much what you just described. We would sit down with people, and we would say, okay, you have this house blessing coming up. What is it what does this mean to you that you have your first home? And they would tell you what it means, and they would give you information about themselves, and then you would ask them maybe 20 different questions to get a sense of what this really means to them. Then you would identify if, in this particular ceremony I'm thinking of, it was a Jewish woman and a Hindu man. And neither of them really were following their religion, but both of their parents, who were both alive, and some of their grandparents, were in their religions. And so what they wanted to do was have a ceremony, a cross-cultural ceremony, that brought in elements of both of their histories, their origin family, and honor both families because they really felt that they were able to have this home because of the help of their parents and grandparents. And we did a ceremony that was lovely, that started with planting a specific tree outside because they had to rough up all the old plantings because they were overgrown. And we moved through with some Hindu blessings. Every time we did one blessing, we found the equivalent. And personally, I was really, even though I'm knowledgeable, surprised at how much similarity there is between Hindu customs and Jewish customs. And we shared that knowledge with the guests until we eventually came into the house. And then we had a breaking of the challah and a great prayer that was a Hindu prayer. And we went through this entire maybe a half an hour ceremony that was intended to tell their, to thank the people who made it happen, but also to put a blessing on the house and to have the house understand what their intentions with this home was, so that they brought to it their own energy. Now, before the ceremony, they had gone with their parents and they had cleared out the energy in the rooms and whatnot. We didn't do that at the ceremony. That was done beforehand. But they, I think that people are getting really conscious, again, of intention and how and what you do with intention. And what a celebrant does is they listen to the people, create a ceremony about those people, and basically just act as the choreographer of an event. And in a wedding, I think that one of the greatest things, if anyone out there is thinking of getting married, is that a celebrant tells the story of the couple that is getting married and includes whatever rituals they want to have from cross-cultural symbols. But one of the things I love about it is, have you ever been to a wedding and you're sitting there and you have a guy out there and he's mumbling, or a woman, and they're carrying on, and you're looking at the back of this bride and the groom and you're looking at the person who's doing the ceremony. Well, how many people go to a ceremony to spend a half an hour, 45 minutes looking at the officiant? In a celebration that we do, we step to the side, and the people who are getting married turn and face the audience. And that little bit makes such a more intimate situation, so that the people that are there really feel like they are part of that person's love story. And when you do that, you have invested in their community the hopes and the active prayers of this couple's well-being. You're not sitting there waiting to have a party. You are a participant of a ritual that will give you extra a sense of responsibility to the sanctity of this relationship. And I think things like that are needed.
Lynn Ray, do you happen to know their website so we can tell our audience?
Mm-hmm. It's Celebrant, the CelebrantFoundation.com. They're in New
Jersey.
CelebrantFoundation.com. They were just awarded, I think it was by the New York Times, I'm not positive, but it was by a New York publication, as one of the 10 best careers, because they see that people want to have ritual back in their life. And I love that. So much of my work has been ritual. The awards that I've gotten in my life have been for my ritual art. So it's just a very natural segue for me to take and take the things I've learned in my ritual art, and having been an actress as a child and young adult, and combining that with being this choreographer for ceremony.
That's great. I just saw it. It's celebrantinstitute.org. I just found their website. Anyway, it's just
make
something
sure that's
that
the
people.
Right one. Huh?
It says Celebrant Foundation and Institute. Is that it? Out of
I'm writing it
New
up
Jersey?
At the same time. Yeah, hold on.
Okay.
Because there's some that aren't. It's the Celebrant Foundation and Institute, and it is www.celebrantinstitute.org. You're correct.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like something that. That is very much needed on this planet, because when you celebrate and you make things a celebration, it changes your life. It gives you a purpose, you know. It brings you back more to family. It brings you back more to community. It makes it for a better place. If we have more celebrations, and we're really celebrating life, of course,
yes.
And it makes a big difference in one's life. Anyway, have you done some of the ceremonies yet? Are you actually performing weddings and have you started?
Yes, so my next wedding is this coming November 7th, and it's just such a different way of going through ceremonies that it's. Another thing I want to tell you, if anyone does get a celebrant in their city or state, there are some things that you should know. One of them is a celebrant, you would call them, and they'll give you a free interview, so to speak, so that you get to find which one in your neighborhood is the one. You know, they're not as common as Starbucks, as you said, or as yoga studios, but they're nonetheless common in most cities and in most states. And you can talk to them and find the one that you resonate with, because that's really very, very important. And then what happens is they write your story with you. Like I said, they do the questions and they interview it.
Oh, that's great.
And you, as the person who's having the ritual, write that with the person. So you know what is going to be said. You know.
Wow.
So you're going through the formalizing of it, but you're not, and I'll tell you something funny about the wedding that I'm doing this coming week. I was there talking to the bride and her parents. She's the youngest of three children. And not a young girl. I mean, she's in her 30s, but she's the last one to get married. And the father was sitting there, and when I told him that everybody would get a chance to read the story, because I don't want there to be any surprises, you know, that no one gets surprised,
right.
Family all gave that look at one another and burst into laughing. And I knew they knew something I didn't know. I said, "So what's so funny?" And the father said, "When my last daughter was married in a church official ceremony, he said the celebrant, the minister, whatever it was, sat there, and his entire sermon to them was about what to expect in the wedding bed." And I said, "You mean like an allegorical thing?" And he goes, "No, it was absolutely literal." And he said, "And as her father, I was dying of embarrassment." If you don't know what's happening, and all of a sudden you're standing there with whether it's 10, 100, 500 of your closest friends, and somebody is talking about you like that, especially if your back is to them, you can't say, "Excuse me, you can stop now."
Yeah.
So that's not what it should be. Celebration should be something that you remember and that your community participates in and shares your joy.
Well, I remember when I got married, I was so nervous, I don't remember a thing that the rabbi said, except that he kept sniffing. That's all I remember about it. I was so nervous. But anyway,
well,
there's always things
that people aren't going to remember, which is another great point. A celebrant promises to give you a copy of the ceremony.
Well, that's great. If I get married,
no matter what the ceremony is, you get a copy of it. That's part of our commitment, is to give you a copy of the ceremony. When I do ceremonies, it's also a piece of art, but you are given the ceremony for exactly that reason.
Okay, Lynn, we're about to run out of time. We've got about 10 more minutes on the show. Can you tell, I know you gave us a lot of information about the Yogananda Center, the Self-Realization Fellowship, and the Celebrant Center, but can you tell our listening audience, how do we get in touch with you, and is it possible to see your art, or is there any art available that people can purchase or look at? Tell us a little bit about how do we get in touch with Lynn Ray.
Okay. My website is www.lynnraylowe.com. And we are presently, because of the ceremonies that we're doing, we're redoing the website, but it's still a pretty interesting website, and we are adding to it all the time. I mean, we took it all down, which was 25 years of art, and we're putting it back up and reorganizing it. But you would get a sense of what I do the way it looks right now. And again, that's www.lynnraylowe.com. And we have just started to redo the shop. And so the first things we put in are what I call illuminations, which is something that I developed that is a... When I became an international artist, it was because I did dancing figures with light and color on metal. I made the move. And I questioned whether I could do the same thing in a 2D. Could I make metal move if it wasn't a dancer, if it wasn't sculpture? And I have developed this amazing technique that I call inner landscapes or illuminations. And they sell for a lot of money, the originals, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone who would be interested in an original. But we have what we call a gift collection. And they're small, they're 5x7 and framed out, and they're normally $34 a piece. And we are offering to your listeners, if they use the code ART, A-R-T-18, their choice of as many as they would like, not only today, but up until the end of November. And they can keep on going back to the website also and seeing whatever else is being put up, because we are adding. The next thing we're going to be doing is I have a whole group of inspirational angels, and they're going to be coming up probably within the next week. So, you know, go once, visit often. The coupon, again, is a discount for the 5x7 prints. And they're on metallic paper. They're a great holiday gift, and it is ART18 at a 10% discount.
Coupon. Okay, that's the code, ART18. And it's
right.
LynnRayLowe.com?
Yep.
Okay, well, anyway, I'm sure that some people will definitely take advantage of it and take a look at her art. It's very, very inspirational, and it. You know, when you live in Tucson, Arizona, you get to see some really beautiful landscape, and I know that in your art, sometimes you see that just beauty of nature. You know, living in Miami Beach, we've got the ocean, of course, but we got a lot of people, too.
Can I tell the one other thing that I'd like to mention?
Sure,
you know, my
I'd
life,
love to hear.
Things all always connect. The last big project I did, I do huge donor walls, and I just want to say the last one I did was an 8-foot square tree of life.
What is a donor wall?
A donor wall can be either something. We just did one at the University of Arizona that's on the website, and everybody who paid money got a different color brick, so to speak. You know, the metal sculpture.
Oh, okay.
And so it's something that you pay money, and then it's public recognition. This particular wall that went to the University of Maine, however, is for the donor organ network. And all they wanted in the hospital was something that would help people when somebody dies suddenly, and especially if they're young, if you can harvest, which is a terrible word, but it's real, the organs, then you can give life. You give the gift of life. And I was asked to make a donor tree that would help that hospital when things happened to be able to have educated the people in advance by putting this gigantic tree in the lobby. So I just did a huge donor tree, and I love doing that. And if anyone out there ever has any kind of a donor awareness, especially for things that relate to the donor organ or health, you know, helping a medical situation, that really resonates with me. So I just want to say I do a lot of donor trees and other kinds of memorial walls. So.
Right. Well, anyway, thank you for sharing that, because, you know, you do some wonderful work on the planet, and you're a wonderful person, and I'm really grateful that you came on the show and shared your website and about the, Maya Yoga Shakti being in Deerfield Village and Yogananda's work, and also, you know, the Celebrant Institute. And, boy, you're just a bundle of knowledge, and I'm really grateful that you could come. The show is all about energy, and I know you have a massive amount of energy, and I'm glad that you brought your energy. Yeah, right. I'm glad that you were able to share the energy, of the time when you were young with your mother, who must have been a wonderful person to, you know, turn you on to such things at an early age, and all the way up to what it's turned you into as a international artist and someone that really puts back to the community. So is there anything else you'd like to say? We got about 2 minutes left.
I just really think that even if people don't want to buy, please take the time to go to my website. It's a really beautiful journey through art. and all kinds of different medias. I want to thank you very, very much for having me and allowing me this opportunity. I know this is a new show, and I send you blessings and really great wishes that it turns out to be very successful. And if you ever come to Tucson, Arizona, I think that what we should do is a ceremony for it.
Okay, that would be wonderful to do a ceremony for the show, and maybe we'll even have a dinner.
That would be lovely. All right. Thank you very much,
Thank
Dr.
you so
Woody.
Much for being on the show. Okay, good night.
Good night.
This is Dr. Woody, and that was Lynn Ray Lowe. Check her website out, www.lynnraylowe.com. She's a great artist and has been a good friend for many, many years. And I'm so glad that she came on to share this energy. And she brought out so much that we all have a creative spirit inside. And when we start to open up, that creativity takes many different directions. Sometime in your arts, sometimes in the healing arts, like myself, sometimes in the work you do, you know, how you work with people, you know, just saying hello to people, stopping and visiting a sick one once in a while, just calling somebody and saying, hi, how are you feeling? I've been thinking about you. Those things are really creativity from the heart. And when we open up the heart energy, the heart is about love, respect, honor, and joy, and opening up to who we really are. And when we can expand that energy, expand it out to others, we get to see everything. We get to see the good. We get to see the bad. But we get to see a certain part of life that is hardly touched. But when it is touched and nurtured, it opens up like a lotus flower. And when that opens, your life changes. Miraculous. And that's what life's about. A life is a gift. And a lot of people go through life and they forget to open that gift. Once you open the gift, then all the treasures in the world come out. You know, love, respect, honor, joy, riches. I always sign my blog
3 seconds.
To your health, wealth, and happiness. So to your health, wealth, and happiness, this is Dr. Wu saying thank you for listening in. We're going to have a great artist in 2 weeks, Richard Stocker, who's a great artist and a great person with a ton of energy, and his energy will touch your heart as it touched mine. So until, not this week, but the following Tuesday, it's Dr. Wu saying thank you for joining in. Thank you for being there. I'm always there for you. If you need me, if you need anything, contact me, energymedicineradio.com, or go to bbsradio.com/energymedicine and write in. I'm there for you. I always will be. I'm always there. And let's create something beautiful together. Lynn Ray, we want to thank you again for coming on the show. Have a wonderful evening.
Join Dr. Wu Di every first and third Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Or listen again online at bbsradio.com/energymedicineradio. Wishing you the best in your health, wealth, and happiness.